Open loops. Do, do. Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. You must listen to the open loops, a theme park for absurd beliefs and systems of integration between the mind and the creative spirit. Open loops.
Hey, you. Welcome to Open Loops with Greg Bornstein, Conversations That Bend, a talk show for your unconscious mind. That's right. What is an open loop? It's a cliffhanger. It's the dot, dot, dot. It's the thing that, well, it's the promise, but then not delivering it immediately and making you wonder, what is it? What's he going to say? An open loop is an unconscious provocation, and that's what this show is all about. You see, I like bringing on guests, as well as myself, challenging your existing belief system with radically unique ideas to stimulate your unconscious mind so you can step into the highest version of yourself. Call me a cultural hypnotist. Call me a other-than-conscious thought leader. Call me a transformational entertainer. I'm all of those things. But if you put them all together, I'm a looper. And I want to loop you along into opening up different possibilities in your mind and in your soul. Speaking of mind and soul, Perry Shawn, the founder of the Selling with Science and Soul Facebook group, also a renowned sales coach. And the group is where she's doing the action, but the in the field, talking to your teams, making their sales process completely change and doubling, tripling numbers in an afternoon. That's her trade. And hey, look, after hitting you with a very heavy hypnosis week, I said, okay, let's get a little more. Let's get something that everybody can use. Everyone's always selling. And Perry still dips into the worlds of psychology, and especially with neuroscience backing up everything she says. She very much is able to speak to different paradigms of thought. However, the radically unique ideas she shares are that everything that I got into sales for isn't as interesting in terms of what actually gets customers to buy. You're going to learn about that. You're going to learn about the key element of trust. You're going to learn about how she would combat the common objections that in my personal sales experience I've had to deal with, as well as different things she puts in place to really break through that hard prospect that just isn't giving you anything. It's not about the selling. It's about the buying. It's about walking hand in hand with the buyer. Perry does an amazing job of explaining this. I really enjoyed this conversation with her. And I think even if you're not in a sales position, you are. You're definitely in a sales position. Now, if you think this is a conversation worth sharing, please do tell your friends about Open Loops. Tell your family. If you like this podcast, hit the subscribe button on Apple Podcasts. And if you could please rate the show, leave a review, even a word, even a question mark that says, I think this is amazing and I don't know why, dot, 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 i.e. leaving an open loop. Hey, anything helps. Pull the people in. Get the intrigue going. You want to learn how to sell without selling? Oh, yes. Perry Shawn, she's a master at it. Enjoy the episode. Talk to you soon. Today on Open Loops, we have the wonderful, award-winning author, speaker, sales master, but also just seems like a soulful, giving person. We have Perry Sean here. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Perry.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah. You know, what interests me is that before this interview started, I was like, I'm into persuasion and hypnosis and influence and all this stuff. And you're like, yeah, I don't really teach that at all. And yet you teach sales, or at least you work in the sales field. I'm sort of curious, what is your overall philosophy when it comes to what sales actually is?
I think it's more about buying than it is about selling. Because what the research shows us is that people actually have already made a large portion of their decision before they actually speak to a salesperson. And the neuroscience teaches us that people have actually made the decision unconsciously before they actually become consciously aware of it. And with that in mind, then the job of the salesperson is not to sell them, but instead to meet them where they are and then help them with the remainder of their buying decision. So if someone is, let's say, they've been on a journey, whatever that might be, and there might be at 75% of their buying decision complete, then the job of the salesperson is to find out where they are, not go back over. I get called in to help large organizations improve their sales. And one of the first things I do is, can I listen to some sales conversations? And when I do, what I hear is the salesperson doing a lot of talking rather than, and often, I mean, they often are talking about how great their product is, how long the company's been in business, how great the company is, et cetera, et cetera. Meanwhile, they're turning the person off who they're speaking with because they're chatting too much. Instead, I teach them how to actually join them where they are in their buying decision and then help them with that remainder part of the buying decision. And it makes for a very different kind of conversation. You become a partner in many ways in the dynamic. And as a result, sales results often go through the roof. And I was last year, I was typically, I will often take the sales role of the team and let them listen in as I sell. And last year, I'm thinking of one particular group that I did it with, and they were a group that what they sold was highly technical. Most of the salespeople were engineers. So it was something that I would not understand their industry for the life of me. It would take me, you know, a good 5-10 years to go to school, at least to be where they were. And I took on being their salesperson. One of the team members had a mic, I had a mic, and the national team was all sitting around listening in. And as they watched me do it, you could see they were just sort of gobsmacked, you know, some of the jaws were dropping. And then when we debriefed afterwards, they said, we can't believe, one, that you can sell our product, and two, that not knowing our industry at all, but part of my job was to find out where they were in that decision making and just help them going forward. And they said, there was a lot of silence in the conversation. I said, yes. I said, because I'm giving them space to make that decision that they're making. It's not about me talking over the decision. It's about me being present to that decision. And I refer to that as sales presence, because too often it's trying to do, you know, twist arms to slam dunk a close versus let's have a conversation and see what we can do to help you get what you need. Very different, but it works, and it works really well.
Wow. Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, what's interesting about this is that, I definitely think this speaks to at least the curiosity that drew me in to learning about sales and psychology in the first place. I think that in the media, and especially as a child watching a cartoonish depiction of a Svengali type person and what the power of influence and mind control is, there is something that is very much at least initially appealing about knowing the right words to say, crafting the perfect sentence, having mystical powers that draws you in. And I have to say, the more I delve into my personal studies of persuasion and influence and stuff like that, yeah, there is some of that. And that is how marketers do a great job of hooking people that are like curious like me into it. But oftentimes, you get to the other side of it. Yeah, it's kind of like you just let them talk. And then they sell themselves. Like, that's on the other side of it. And I really do wonder, in your experience, were you in a sales role initially? Did it start with you thinking you had to get just the right words? What was the moment for you when you realized you could let go of that control and really shift it?
It's been an incredible journey. My background, originally, I was a high school teacher for 15 years.
Oh, wow.
And I got into finding out. I'm a curious sort, and I'm a bit of a geek. And so I combed through the research to find out, because I wasn't content as a teacher that the way I was taught is what actually is the way students learn. And so I did a lot of research. Then I started to do my own with the students in my class. And then it got the attention of the government is what I was doing, because I flipped things around in the classroom. And the class averages, even when they were testing me with pilot projects with, you know, kids who had learning challenges, that kind of thing, the class averages were 80%. And they actually tested, I was an English teacher, and they gave me all sorts of different subjects to teach, even though I did not have the expertise in that area, but I worked with it. And what we discovered was that the students performed better with multiple things, but one of the major components of it was the questions. We now know today that as you ask someone questions, you help build neurological connections for them. But back then, we didn't know that. And so this was more than 20 years ago. And so I was doing this, testing it, getting these class averages that were pretty high. They started to test the students to see if they were cheating, to find out, you know, and they discovered that they weren't. So that meant that what I was doing was valid. And then I ended up teaching other teachers how to do what I was doing. The government was giving me grants. And teaching other professors. And then I was teaching at these large educational conferences. And at one of those conferences, someone from the corporate world came to see me. And after my presentation, he said, "You have no idea what you're sitting on. You have to take this to corporate." And I'm like, "No, I'm a career educator." And no. Well, he was persistent. He said, "Just take somebody on this summer. That's all. Just over the summer." And of course, it was his organization. I worked with them because he got me to see the benefits of it. And as I did it one day a week for 6 weeks over the summer. And at the end of the 6 weeks, they doubled their sales, much to my surprise and much to their surprise. And at the same time, I also had my own company at the same time with a partner. And so I was kind of busy. So I'd finish my teaching day working with other teachers as well. And then I would take 3 cell phones, and they were quite large back then and not always that reliant. And I would be coaching executives across the country on implementing what we had done. It became really clear, because other people were hearing and were interested in how do you do this. And that began my career of... it's almost like I've just gone into it sort of through the back door, and developed what works, because I question everything. And then I got to the point where I worked with 4 neuroscience grad students, and we would, comb through the research each week. We would determine, you know, which studies look like good ones that would match with what we're doing. And then I tested in these large corporate sales teams. The largest one I've ever worked with is what, 700. And when you have large sales teams, they track everything, which is great, because then it gave us a great ground by which to find out what worked and what didn't. So that's the ground in which this bubbled up. So it wasn't that I was actually, and it's interesting. You know, I don't come from what people would consider the traditional sales world.
I was going to say, that's kind of unique, an English teacher that got corralled into being in the math department or something. Like this, you know, that's in, yeah, that's a very distinct background to have, an English teacher. And believe me, I love the English teachers. They are the saving grace. They are, I didn't think about this until this year. A good English teacher is the original life coach. If you think about it, really,
like at lunchtime, yes, my room was the life coaching room. Yes, for sure.
Yes. But it's awesome that you sort of managed to not just be stuck in all the fluffy life coach land. Like you're like, hey, looking at evidence here. I'm looking at why this stuff is working. Is it questions? That's a big, I, Perry, I feel like I want to just throw a bunch of things that I've heard from sales trainers at you and see your unique spin on it. One of them is questions. One of them is the constant, a good salesperson is asking more questions than selling a lot. Yeah. And if they are asking lots of questions as part of the process, how do you start? What kind of questions do you ask? How do you get a good grounding in the right type of stuff to meet where the buyer is at?
Right. A great question. And yes, it's fundamentally based in questions, because ideally you do not want a person who's selling or helping others with their buying, to be focused in on talking. What we've discovered is as soon as you go beyond four sentences, you're going to lose somebody. Wow. Sales actually go down when you talk beyond four sentences. And so for that reason, staying in the question, part of it is, and I'm not a believer in scripts, because each person's buying decision is different. They're coming from a different place. What are they basing the decision that they've made so far on? And that's the responsibility of the person who's helping them. And so with that in mind, when you that first question you ask is pivotal. Because, and also the way in which you set up your sales processes is also pivotal, because if you're reaching out to them, you're at a disadvantage.
Interesting.
But if they're reaching out to you and you've made your sales processes so it's they self-identify and it's inbound, they're going to be much further along in their buying decision than if you're reaching out to them.
Do you work with cold calling companies?
No. Because my research shows that when you do cold calling, the majority, because if you look at, we work with what I refer to as a spectrum of buying. And the spectrum of buying is, you know, someone can be at 0, 25% of their buying decision complete, so they're most likely not going to buy. 50%, meaning they could buy or not buy, meaning they're window shopping. 75%, meaning that they know they're going to buy, they just don't know which product. And then finally, you know, the 100%ers who know they're going to buy, and they know exactly which product. And they're really quick when they're speaking to a salesperson. That would be my husband. You know, I like watching him do this. He goes into a store, speaks to the salesperson, and the salesperson goes in back, pulls out comes back with a box. My husband gives him his credit card, and within 5 minutes, he's out of the store.
Totally.
And so with sales, with cold calling, when you're doing that, when you're reaching out to them without, you know, totally cold, typically they're at zero. And so that then makes your sales conversations a lot longer. It makes the conversation about, you know, creating interest. And if you're really, really lucky, they might be a little bit beyond zero in their buying decision, but in most cases not. And so, and it's also difficult on the nature of the person who's making those calls. And that's where you have a lot of turnover, with regards to staff. So instead, to design your sales processes so that they're reaching out, then they're further along in their buying decision, that will give you the, you know, ultimately the best results.
Yeah. In your work with a company, say you find out they're cold calling. Is that when you're like, oh, okay, this isn't for Perry Sean? Or do you actually talk to those people like, okay, let's get you a funnel here first and then call me up? What do you do with those guys?
It depends. I have done a fair amount of work in contact centers. And part of it is, you know, an exploration. Are you inbound or outbound? And, you know, if they say that they are outbound, are you considering changing your model? Yes, actually we are. Ah, great. Well, let's have a conversation. If they're not, then it's not a match. Because it's a different, and that's where you get into where you're working on, you know, the influence, et cetera. My preference is to stay, let's work with the brain and what's already going on for you help you. That's, to me, the most effective and efficient.
That's interesting. So I want to ask you and I know we didn't answer fully the question about the questions, but we'll get back to that in a second.
Okay.
Whenever we get to it. Then, okay. So you are coming from the cold calling world, which I definitely have come from, and you're now on the other side of it where you do get presented a qualified opportunity, which in this world means they've had a discovery call. I've worked for organizations where the classic BANT is met, right? Budget, authority, need, timeline, whatever, that being the measure of qualification doesn't necessarily mean it is in the buying world. I'm sure you have thoughts on that. Mm-hmm. But say you are handed an opportunity where supposedly they are willing to do a more extensive conversation as a demo of the software or just go deeper into maybe making the right decision. If you are handed an opportunity like that, mm-hmm. Is it salvageable using your background with science and soul, or is there a little more buy-in that they need before you would even consider taking them through the processes you've developed? Yeah. Like, how are they qualified enough for you?
Ideally, you want them at a 75 to 100% of their buying decision complete before you have the conversation. Okay. Ideally. All right. And so there are things that you can do with marketing to ensure that they're that far along, and also to take the information as a salesperson's having conversations. And a lot of organizations miss this, and this is part of what I encourage people to do, is to take the information, because the sales team has the real-time information about what's going on with their clients. And so with that in mind, you want to make sure that that information that they're getting is gathered in some way, so that then that information then helps. Like, let's say this week you're having conversations, let's say 25 people a day. I'm just making this up. And so you're having 25 conversations in a day. So that's what, 125 in a week. You're going to have a pattern that you're going to discover of what's important to clients. What are they using for making their decisions? And with that in mind, then you want to then utilize that in the marketing. Put it in your content marketing. And then track it the next week. What do you discover? All right, let's put that information in our marketing, because then you move the people further along in their buying decisions before you actually have that conversation. And it's a real strategic way of making sure those conversations are lined up properly. So if you do, I'll go to your scenario that you were providing. Yes, it can work. But part of it is making sure that they're far enough along. So you don't want to get on a call with someone who's at, say, 25% of their buying decision complete. You're most likely, it's going to be a real tough conversation. But if you put systems in place, it makes it much easier for you, you know, if you're at the 75%, to help them with that remainder, because they're looking for a solution. And then the question is whether you're a match or not, which is great. So if you get them at 65, 70, that's okay too. Okay. But I wouldn't want it less than 50%. Okay. Wow. In terms of process. Now, the fact that they've agreed to a second conversation tells me that they're interested and that they do have a large portion of their decision made. So part of it is to find out what criteria that they're actually using to get them to the point where they are now. So part of it is tying, you know, the first question is to tie it to how they found you or what caused them to reach out. So I might ask, and I'm just playing here, I don't know the details, but I would play with asking something around, when you scheduled this call, you know, what was it in your mind that you know, depending on what it is, and connect it to whatever whatever it is that you're offering. If someone reached out to me via LinkedIn, I'd ask them, well, what was it in my profile that caused you to reach out? I know I have articles and I have videos in there. Depending on what they say, they might say, oh, Perry, you know, when you were talking about the neuroscience and how people make their buying decisions, that is something I want my team to learn. Or they may say something to the effect of, you know, when you were talking about sales coaching and how you can help sales managers help their teams get great results without having to take the team off the front line, that really spoke to me. Well, now I know part of where they're at.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if they come by a referral, I might ask, so what was it that, you know, Greg said that was, what caused you to reach out or caused you to want to talk? And that, it's a way of making yourself a partner to somebody. And it lines up things so that you don't have buyer's remorse. And buyer's remorse is something that you know, people often experience when they don't feel like they were part of that decision. And yeah. So instead, when I use this approach, I teach others to use this approach, people are repeat clients. It's something that's really high. Referrals is really high. And referrals, people are typically, when I ask groups, I've done this with thousands of people, and I will ask them first to choose any particular product or something that they purchased with the help of a salesperson. And I ask them where they are on that spectrum, you know, 25, 50, 75, or 100. The majority, 80% of the group or more, will say that they're at 75% of their buying decision complete.
Wow.
Kind of cool. And then when I ask about referrals, 80% of the group or more says they're at 100% of their buying decision complete when they've been given a referral to a professional service. So, well, lining up your business so that there's more repeat and referral makes it even more efficient and effective, which is what I like to help people with.
Yeah. Look, you're so good at with these numbers and sales. I'm like, I wonder what she had to say about Catcher in the Rye. Like, this is amazing. But also, you know what, Perry, I wonder, now I'm thinking about people that have, in my sales work, if people have come to me in the past and said, oh, I just want to see what's out there. If that's like, why'd you agree to take this call today? Well, you know, I'm always interested in seeing what's out there. There's no way that's 50%. Have you ever converted any of those people? What would you do with something like that?
No. So I would first find out if they've looked at it, other things. And that may seem like a really weird way to go, but, and then I would inquire as to why they're interested in what's out there. And then that will get to the root of what's going on for them.
That's good. Okay. You blew my mind. That's great. always looking for that in every episode. Okay. This is really helpful. This is really, I mean, personally to me in my work, but also just understanding the way buyers make decisions. You know, there is a lot right now. I think it's a hot button word, the neuroscience of the neurochemistry behind sales and da, 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 da. Is your neurochemistry, your understanding of neuroscience, different than other sales trainers out there? What is the specific brain stuff that you're looking at when it comes to buying decisions?
I'm looking specifically at what works in a conversation. I'm not looking at the neuromarketing. I'm looking at what happens verbally. Yes, I've also explored, you know, eye tracking, etc. So you design your emails and such according to the buying decision. But I'm looking at what happens when someone makes the decision to buy and what happens in a conversation. Because to me, I'm looking at this dialogue, you know, when two people talk, what's going on in someone's brain when they decide to buy, when they're having a conversation, when someone asks them questions, when someone isn't demonstrating that they're listening, you actually activate those pain centers in the brain. Someone the other day asked me about which neuroscience books am I reading? And it's like, I don't read them because I find we get the bias of the person writing the book. Instead, it's the studies that I'm looking at so I can, you know, layer on pieces of research one on top of the other to see what actually shifts. Now, what I've discovered is, because someone was asking me the other day, well, how much does that change what you're doing? I've found there is a foundation that's consistent, absolutely consistent. And then as I learn new things, it sort of, I plug it in to it to support. I haven't found anything that's contradictory of what that foundation is. It's only emphasizing more and more the importance of, you know, because we all have, I'll add this, we've all experienced the manipulative techniques that people have used in the past. And they do work. There's no question that they work, okay? I find that people have, they'll call it trust antenna or trust meter, that, you know, you use those techniques, they sort of, there's a reaction. I can share because in my earlier years when I would go to a social event and someone would find out I was a high school teacher, you know, they would typically lean in. Whereas they find out that I'm now in sales and leadership, and the sales in particular, they sort of lean back. And because we have that negative connotation, but instead, with, you know, this trust aspect, which is something I've been researching for more than 20 years, is fascinating to me that no matter what age group, no matter what industry, no matter what level in an organization, everyone comes back. There's 50 behaviors to earn trust, but everyone comes back with one of them in the 90 percentile every single time. And the one behavior to earn someone's trust is listen to me, which again demonstrates the importance of asking questions so that the individual can share what's going on for them and their decision to buy.
Yeah. It makes me just think of the horrendous sales calls I've ever had. Like people that are just closed off, kind yes. of like you ask the open-ended question. Mm-hmm. I've had salespeople call it a pulse check. How do you feel like you could use something like this? And then they're, it looks great. And you got to be like, oh, well, how does it look great? Good, just seems pretty easy. And I'm sitting there going, I know there's something deeper here, and mm-hmm. I feel like I could have connected with them, and maybe I missed the chance. I mean, are those moments reconcilable? How would you immediately deal with someone that fits kind of they're playing their cards close, I guess, that buyer persona? Mm.
I often will qualify things ahead of time and say, well, in order for me to be helpful, the more I know about what's going on in your world, means I can be more helpful. So that means I might be asking you a few questions. Is that okay? And then that way, then they know that I'm asking questions. I've gotten their permission to do so. I had, I sometimes do presentations for CEO groups. And afterwards, typically several of the CEOs will come up to speak with me and arrange to have conversations afterwards. So last year I was speaking with one of them. I'm thinking about one particular conversation. And as we're having the conversation, she's a CEO of a large insurance company. And as we're having the conversation, she says, stop. And I said, what's wrong? I thought there was something going on in her office. And she said, I just have to tell you, I am so loving this. I said, oh, great. I'm glad to hear. And then she said, I've been keeping track of the number of questions you've been asking me. Mm. I said, oh, have I been asking too many? And she said, no. She said, I'm actually loving this so much because I feel like you understand my business and I feel like you care about my business. And this is what I want my team to be doing with their our clients. And I said, oh, okay, sure. I can be, you know, I can, that's part of what I do is I teach them how to ask those questions. And she said, would you like to know how many you've actually asked? I said, sure. She said, 41 questions. And I said, does it feel like an interrogation? She said, no, not at all. I said, so are you okay if I ask a few more questions? And she said, yes, bring it on. So part of it is, you know, we want to use the questions as a means of helping them with that decision. And as you ask the questions, the individual who you're speaking with will become more consciously aware of the decision that they've already made, and they'll become more engaged with that.
Well, I don't even remember the question I asked, but I feel like I got all the answers I needed, which means you're good at this. Okay, so as I'm saying, maybe, I don't know, maybe I just made that up. That makes it an even better sale for you. So here, take my money. Okay, so you know what I was wondering? Do you feel like you have to, when people stand back, when you tell them you're a salesperson, do you feel like it's your role to get them to buy into it? Yeah, they don't buy that I'm a salesperson. I'm going to make them not only okay with me, but okay with sales and leadership coaches.
Yeah. To me, I'm very much aware that I think that there's a statistic I read that 69% of people have a negative perception of sales. And when we think about how many people are actually in sales, there's a lot of people in sales. And so that means even the people who are in sales have a negative perception of sales based on the percentage. So I just recognize it's unfortunate until, and once they know what I'm talking about, then they go, okay, that's great. That works. But they have this image that's in their head, which is what I don't do. And
yeah. Wow. So that's good. Yeah. I also wonder about, because I've been seeing a little more of this recently, someone that I follow that's in the sales and kind of persuasion world talks a lot about how years ago, finding someone's core values as part of the sales process and then just zeroing in on those values positively, but also negatively, he believes no longer works because, or at least it doesn't make you feel good to be like, well, you know, I mean, it's, you could invest in confidence. It, you know, or something, if you're a dating coach or something, like, oh, you could invest in having more confidence with meeting the opposite sex today. But what happens if you don't invest? Are you going to deal with lack of confidence forever? It's almost worse not to invest because you're going to feel the pain of never meeting the right person. That, like, that kind of negativity that may have once really worked, people are no longer, at least he believes, he doesn't think it's the most effective way to get to people. What do you think about that use of strategic negativity when it comes to triggering that decision-making to actually go ahead and purchase?
I think everybody has it internally. They have two things that are driving them. One is the avoidance of something, or, and they're seeking something in a particular, you know, related to whatever it is that you're selling. And so part of it is because that's part of what they're using for their decision making. So, but it's not my job to talk about it. It's my job to help them talk about it.
Oh, that's different. That's different. Wait a minute. She's pausing, getting me to think about this. I'm in the sales process. Perry, wait a minute. So when you say that and you're talking to someone, they're at the 75% place, what are some examples of a way you would get someone to talk about it themselves without you needing to prod them? Because yeah, I've definitely been in that trap when they're like, well, you know, okay, I'll give you an example, concrete. Well, it's just, I don't know if I feel necessarily good about spending this amount of money. things are tough right now, and I know the benefits are going to be good for me long term, and I know this. It's just I can't afford to spend this right now. And then my default position is, but look at all these things long term that you did speak to that you wanted. Do you really want to give those up? That, I guess, is the sales 101, like, yeah, go for the pain, go for the pain. How would you combat that so it doesn't make it seem like you're the source of their pain and they're coming at to them themselves? Mm-hmm.
So I would just say, so let me see if I understand. So you're interested, is that correct? And then they'll say yes or no. Yes, I'm interested. So when would you like to have results? Right? And I would, and then tell me a little bit about what's been the challenge for you that's driving you to want those results. So I would do it in a form of asking questions to find out if now is the time for them. And I would be as transparent to say, so right now, if what you're telling me then is that you want the results next month, and it would save you how much? And then they, you know, say, so how would that contribute? Because part of what you're describing is a price objection. And we typically, there's four price objections that I've discovered from my research, just from, you know, all the conversations I've listened to and what patterns I've seen. And so part of it is, you know, is it that they're not, because quite often people aren't thinking as clearly. And if it's not a match, it's not a match at this particular time. And to me, do I want to, you know, force the issue and cause buyer's remorse? Do I want to, you know, the other part is people often leave things on the table when the person actually wanted to buy. And I know for myself, I will often want to buy something, but the salesperson does such a poor job. I don't want to reinforce bad behavior so that it's, you know, the next person doesn't have to deal with the same thing because the salesperson goes, oh, it worked. So they try the same thing again. I save myself a lot of money that way because we have a deal in the household that we don't buy because we don't want to reinforce behavior. But to me, it's important to explore it with the client. And I will often say, so, because I'm not, and this is also something as a salesperson, is setting yourself up so that you're not desperate for the sale. Because let's say the person does decide, you know, right now is not the time, but the time might be in 2 months rather than 1 month. And so does that mean that I'm going to push for it for the 1 month because I'm desperate to have that sale now, and then I lose the possibility of a month later, 2 months later? So instead is to be really transparent about what is best for you, but help them think through all of the various aspects. So let me just double check, you know, so 2 months from now is better for you, and the cost of opportunity for you in that time frame you're comfortable with, is that correct? And I, you know, we would use whatever that is relative to the actual product. Actually, no, I'm not comfortable with that cost of opportunity. So yes, I want it in a month. Okay, great, let's go ahead. Or yes, I'm okay with that cost of opportunity, and let's put it off for 2 months. Call me in a month. Okay, you still got the sale, you know, and you haven't created buyer's remorse.
Oh, that's really good. That's very helpful. What are some cool things about the neuroscience of this buying-making process? I'm sort of curious how deep the rabbit hole goes, and is there anything in particular that is just not even common knowledge that you could just rattle off right now about buying decisions that would blow my mind?
First off, I mean, I'll emphasize some of the things I've shared already. One is that people have already made the buying decision. I had someone in one of my programs recently, the woman started to cry. And I said, what's going on for you? And she said, the fact that people have already made the decision to buy, I've been so stressed out about selling that I thought I had to force people. I said, no. I said, you'll actually sell more if you don't. And she said, this is just such mind shift for me that I just have to find out where they are and then help them. And I said, exactly. I said, we'll work on the processes to get there. But yeah. And then there's quite a few, and there's different pieces. There's a lot that emphasizes that we actually, there's been talk about this topic before, but there hasn't been the neuroscience to prove it, is that the more emotionally engaged somebody is, the more they will buy. And so our job with our questions is to engage somebody more. And when I'm teaching my programs and I'm helping people with learning how to recognize when someone is in that point in which they're most emotionally engaged, too often people will start going to more of a logical thing. Yes, we go emotional first and then our brain goes to logic to justify it. But to help somebody when they're in that that emotional point is when you want to be able to be speaking about what you do. No more than four sentences, okay? And that is what will get you the best results. Make sure that when you're asking the questions, and part of this is because I don't believe in scripts for this reason, is if you've ever done ballroom dancing, you know how there's a dance together and you respond to one another in that movement. That's what having a sales conversation is like, is that you're adapting to the individual. You're not planning which question you're going to ask. Yes, you have prepared questions beforehand so that they come off, you know, roll off the tongue really well, but you don't have a checklist that you do this question, because that may not be at all relevant to what's going on for the person who you're speaking with. And that's the reason why the presence is so important, because the reason why one person buys something versus another can be different reasons. And often people need very little information to complete their buying decision. We think we have to talk a lot. It's really about being tight. Other pieces of research that I've shared is that if someone perceives that they're not being heard, it actually activates the pain centers of the brain. So,
oh, wow.
So if you ask a question that doesn't fit the conversation and it feels like you didn't hear them, then you've activated those pain centers. Have you ever had a conversation with someone significant in your life and you feel like they're not hearing you and you get this aggravated feeling? It might just be that, you know, activating of those pain centers. And to me, I teach a class we're helping entrepreneurs on how to actually have these conversations. And it's interesting, you know, that somebody will say something that's really significant and then they'll move on and change the topic to something else. Whereas if you're listening really, really well, you'll hear those significant pieces and then say, oh, so tell me more about that. And then they'll open up the floodgates and all of a sudden there's a lot more there. And when I'm having the conversations, let's say with executives that I'm working with, decision makers for large large scale training, I often am very much aware of what's the professional win for them, but I'm also looking for what's the personal win for them. And I feel like I earn the right during the conversation as I listen to them well, ask appropriate questions that get us into the root of what's going on. And then I earn the right to ask a question. So on a personal level, what would you really love out of this situation? Oh, I would really love it if I could be home at an earlier time because, you know, or my team is driving me crazy, or I'm really concerned about them because of burnout because we've been working them really long hours, whatever it is, because I want to make sure I hit both targets, you know, both the professional and the personal.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's so interesting, your definition of earn the right, because what I'm used to is rattling off. I mean, and this was going to be my next question for you about setting when you have a product that isn't a simple solution, when there are things that because you've heard from, you know, from existing clients and customers of yours that, oh, as a salesperson, we should have set the expectations for what this thing was earlier and mm-hmm. given them enough information. There's so many possibilities. You know, it's interesting that the account management side of an existing customer can directly then impact the sales process. We need to make sure we set the prospects up with the right expectations. So now it's okay. Part of the strategy that I've been told is, well, make sure that you get as much information packed into that sales call as possible, while still making sure you ask them questions so they open up. How long should these sales calls be? And in that situation, how do you make sure that they get all the information that you need to make sure they know they're signing into before they actually here's the credit card?
Right.
That's a challenge, I find.
It's all in how you position it. Okay. And to me, part of it is people appreciate transparency, is my experience. Like I have a year-long program that's for entrepreneurs, and I've had some people join it who are new to business, totally new. And they have this wonderful concept and idea that they want to take off. Originally, I didn't have them join the program, but I've created a program within a program kind of thing. And one of the things that, and also in certain industries, there are additional fees or there are unrealistic expectations that are created by other people saying things. And I find that being totally transparent about those things and calling a spade really helps build the relationship. And so I will, with someone who's totally new, I'll say, look, I want to be totally transparent with you. If you're taking this program because you think you're going to get results day one, I want to let you know that that's not going to happen. I feel it's my responsibility to let you know that for you to be able to generate revenue, you first need to learn how to have a profitable sales conversation. And that's going to take you approximately 3 weeks, 4 weeks to be able to master that and do it well, even with you practicing every day. So with that in mind, I would like to ensure that you have realistic expectations going forward, if you decide to take the program. I can't tell you how many people tell me, or I also, in different industries, like for example, it used to be in the cell phone world, that when people would first get a cell phone, there were all these additional fees for activation. And nobody would talk about it. You know, they would, you know, say that their price is this much, but they wouldn't talk about that activation fee. And in the training of the team was to say, you know, you're going to get a phone. People won't tell you, but that what you're actually going to get is also whenever you get a new phone, it's going to have an activation fee attached to it. So if you are speaking with others, make sure you ask about that too before you're comparing. And then inevitably, in those kind of conversations, people would make the decision right away because they found someone they can trust, who's going to give them the real goods.
Yeah, I'm wondering how you do all that in four sentences sometimes. I mean, you just did. When there's so many of those things that I'm thinking, oh gosh, I need to make sure that they know this. When do I drop the bomb on them? Because I've also had, you know, the sales manager be like, oh, well, make sure you give them value first before you hit them with price. First of all, do you believe in that axiom? Do you think you have to give them?
It depends on the individual. Ideally, it depends on what you're selling to. It really makes a big difference. If I'm selling a specific program that has a specific price to it, then yes, I want them to know before they get on the phone because that's part of qualifying the individual.
Got it.
But if it's a service per se that has multiple, like if I'm doing training for an organization, I don't know how many people are in it, how many days they are looking for, you know, what the issues are. Am I talking about doing leadership training, sales coaching training, sales training? There's so many variables in it. I can't give them the price beforehand. I'm a believer that when they bring up prices, when you talk about it, I'm finding that most people don't bring up price. And I often will bring it up to them and say, you know, would it be wise for us to talk about price at this point? When we're and I'm looking at the decision, and many times, at least in my world, the majority of my conversations, price isn't part of the decision-making process, which is fascinating. It's the results that they want.
I was going to ask about what's going on if 75% is there. Why is that 25% so fragile?
It depends on the individual. Like I think about, like, for example, a suit that I bought last year that I knew I was going to buy one. So I was at the 75% mark. I knew what kind of quality, I knew what store I was going to go to, but I didn't know exact, and I know roughly what colors I like, but the salesperson was really great. She asked me some questions. She said, so you present. I said, yes, I do. And she said, so, you know, when you present, do you move much? I said, oh, I move a lot when I'm, you know, reaching for that or pointing or whatever and walking when I present. And she said, then would it make sense that you wear a jacket that doesn't do up so that you can move freely without it bunching up around your shoulders or anything? Yes, I said, that would be awesome. And then she would ask me questions like that. And then that helped her go grab the right suits for me, that it was really clear about what I was going to buy. So I think, well, part of it is how do we work with people? That's the most important dynamically, and ask really great questions.
Yeah. Do we even, at the end of this interview, do we even figure out how to ask very good questions? I mean, I know there are definitely resources. Barry, you've got this Facebook group where I imagine you're definitely having more of these conversations. Yes. Do you want to tell people a little bit about sort of where they can learn more?
Thank you. The group is called Selling with Science and Soul. And what we do in the group, we support one another, challenge one another as well with regards to sales and growing businesses. And I go live once a week and I share, depending on, I'm listening, my team is listening to, you know, what people are asking about, what they're talking about in the group. And then I will make sure that I, you know, will speak about that. We've had topics ranging from referrals to questions to how do you get more clients to how do you set up a great sales strategy, the neuroscience of a sales conversation, you name it. And sometimes we do a draw for an individual that I do some live coaching in the group. So we have a lot of fun.
That's awesome. And you have this book too, Sell More with Sales Coaching, Practical Solutions for Your Everyday Sales Challenges, where I imagine you go more into, I mean, a lot of the stuff. I'm looking at this this exercise workbook that you have, which is, oh boy, if you get this going, you must be able to really, like, in 3 to 4 weeks, just skyrocket stuff. Yeah, is that book, I mean, Sales Coaching, Sell More with Sales Coaching, is that sort of, does that overlap with a lot of the stuff we've talked about today?
It actually was a book that was written for sales managers to help them coach their team. And my publisher, Wiley, what they've told me from their research is that 50% of the people buying it are independent salespeople and entrepreneurs. Yeah. And I said, well, what do you think that is? And they said, we think what they're doing is using the book to coach themselves. And the reason why is I designed the book. I remember when I met with the executive editor for the first time, and he said, I love the way you write. It's so perfect for what we need. I said, oh, thank you. He says, it's so perfect for people who don't read. And I went, pardon?
Yeah, what does that mean?
And he said, people are skimming and scanning today, and the way in which you've designed the book. So the first chapter, there's a diagnostic that lets you know, it's sort of like, you know, choose your own adventure. So the diagnostic lets you know which chapters will be most helpful to you to help you do better. And then in each chapter, there's the content to help you do better, and there's the question, the sales questions to ask yourself or someone else to ask you, and then you know, activities and things to do in order to improve that area of your sales work.
That's awesome. You know, side question: Wiley publishes all these sales books. What are they, the best sales book publishing company ever? Like, are they the, do they have the best salespeople in publishing?
I hope that that's the answer.
Don't you think they must? Every sales book goes through Wiley. And, you know, I mean, you had a very successful, I mean, what was it? Like it got to number 12 or something? Like,
yes, number 12 that year.
Yeah, very, you know, that's very successful with such a, I mean, that's amazing with all the congrats for all the books that they put out. But yeah, do they need sales coaching? Wiley. Perry Sean is here. I don't know if they need it. Any other projects coming up? Do you have any other books in the work? Or I think this science and soul thing is interesting because, I mean, we talked a lot about the neuroscience, but do you get into the soul too, actually? That should be my question.
I definitely get into mindset for sure. Yeah. Because sales brings out so many emotions for people. Mainly because the traditional sales, so, you know, the old techniques that we were talking about earlier, though people are uncomfortable engaging in those, so they have a emotional response. I call, you know, the neuroscience of buying is what I refer to as true sales, and sort of helping people recognize that shift and spectrum, you know, going from that. Also with the mindset is, I've noticed over the years that when a entrepreneur or salesperson has an emotional charge related to money, that they don't do so well either. And so really being transparent with oneself. And it's not about, you know, you got to change the way you think. It's about, oh, let's see, I've got these few little things that are sort of like bumps on the road that are preventing me from doing as well as I could or as well as I would like, or have reached this plateau. And to be conscious of these and learn how to actually dissolve those so that you can move forward and do what you love and create the business and the impact that you would love to do with whatever it is. Because we're all selling. We're all selling whatever it is that's important to us, that's in our highest values, whether we're a child, an adult, or someone who's, you know, near the end of their life. We're all selling somebody on something. It may be as simple as what movie you're going to watch tonight, or as complex as a huge business, but we're all selling something.
Wow. Perry Sean, coachingandsalesinstitute.com. You can also check out the Facebook group, Selling with Science and Soul. Soon might be a podcast of the same name coming. Is that true?
Yes. Got a podcast coming. We're working on that.
Yes. Awesome. As well as Sell More with Sales Coaching, Practical Solutions for Everyday Sales Challenges. And if you reach out to Perry with your book report for Our Town by Thornton Wilder or Catcher in the Rye or any of the classic ninth grade English books, she might give you the feedback you need to change your life. I think she will. Thank you so much for coming. You were awesome. I really learned a lot from you today. You definitely changed my perspective, which is all I want from my guests. So you gave me that and more. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been great to be here with you.
Thank you again for listening. If you enjoyed it, subscribe on Apple Podcasts so you don't miss an episode. Make sure you leave a rating and a review. Perry Sean, I thank you greatly for coming on this show. What a different approach, right? What do you think about this episode? What were you hoping this episode would bring you? And what would it mean if you had it? And how do you feel now knowing that this knowledge you didn't have before has somehow been put inside your head in a way that you weren't even expecting? See, even that's like hypno talk. She's going, yeah, what do you want? Oh, yeah. What's stopping you from getting there? It's simpler. You don't need all that hypno language stuff. Though, some of it's a little fun. Perry, just get to the point. Ask them the question. What do you need? What's going on? I was asking you. What's going on? Are you still listening? Am
afraid to speak more than four sentences. Maybe these podcasts will be four sentences. Make that a question mark so you don't stop listening. Thank you all for listening. We got some weird stuff coming up as we keep going on through this, so get ready. Enjoy your day. Talk soon.